Welcome to Book Bistro, where book enthusiasts come to chat about the books they love in a warm and supportive environment. Today is Wednesday, February 28th, 2024. This is Shannon, and tonight I am here with Georgina, Amber, and Stacy. And we are talking about historical fiction.
Yay!
We've done it before. We will probably do it again because historical fiction is excellent. So we will, of course, get started with the usual housekeeping information. Then Stacy will start us off, followed by me, Georgina, and then Amber. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Book Bistro Podcast. There we have our usual Facebook page where we keep track of our Wednesday reads and also post information about the Friday episodes. We also have a Facebook listener group that you're welcome to join. And if you prefer a different type of listener group, you can contact us and ask about our WhatsApp group. Both groups are pretty small, not super high traffic, and we would love to have you. If you want to get in touch with us off of social media, you can do so by sending an email to thebookbistropodcast@gmail.com. If you're looking for our main hosting page, where you can find information on the podcatchers that make Book Bistro available to you, you can find that information in our show notes.
I sort of feel honored that I get to talk about this book. I thought for sure I'd have to like thumb wrestle somebody for it. But somehow I get to be the one to talk about The Women by Kristen Hannah. It just came out earlier this month, and it is my favorite book so far of 2024, and probably will remain so for a long time. This book is about Frankie, and Frankie at the beginning of the book is a young woman. She's about 20 years old. She's just graduated from her nursing with a nursing degree. But back in the late 60s, you apparently didn't have to have any sort of like practical experience at these little Catholic colleges. You could just get a nursing degree. And she is currently working an overnight shift in a hospital and really like just doing grunt work, essentially, because she really doesn't have any practical experience. And Frankie lives this very pampered life as the daughter of very wealthy parents in Southern California. And she and her older brother are very, very close. And at the start of the novel, we see Frankie first at her brother's going away party. He's going to go off to Vietnam. And at this party, we meet a couple of his friends and the siblings talk. And we learn that it is tradition for all of the men in Frankie's family to go off to war. And we find out that her brother does go to Vietnam. So a few months after his party, where Frankie has this conversation with one of his friends, where they're talking about this hero wall that is in Frankie's father's study. And her brother's friend says that women can be heroes too. And that really is very impactful for Frankie. So a few months later, she follows her brother to Vietnam as a nurse. And Frankie, sweet sheltered Frankie, is not at all prepared for what she's facing as a nurse in Vietnam in the late 1960s. She doesn't have a clue. And so she goes off to Vietnam. She is a nurse there. I'm being very vague. I'm sorry, but I don't want to ruin this book in any way. It is just like the best thing I've ever read. But she goes off to Vietnam. She's going to, you know, be a nurse there in very trying, stressful, not ideal conditions. And while she's there, she meets two other nurses named Ethel and Barb, and the three of them become very close. She kind of develops feelings for a man there. And the first bit of the book is all about her experience, her very visceral experience of being in Vietnam and what that was like to be a nurse, very close to the battles and very close to the fighting and what that was like, the trauma, the stress, and then the beautiful, joyful moments kind of interspersed with like extreme trauma and fear. And upon coming home from Vietnam, Frankie is not prepared for how she is received by those who did not go off to war. As a nurse in Vietnam, she's spit on. She has some trouble reassimilating back into the life that she was living prior to going to Vietnam. And because of this, it causes some issues for her that take several years to sort of iron themselves out, if you will. And that is probably the worst description of a book I've ever given, but I don't want to get into it. I don't want to talk about the love interest. I don't want to talk about the friends, except to say that the female friendship part of this book is one of my favorite aspects of it. I just want everyone to read this book, and Kristen Hannah sucks you into a time and place. Like I felt like I was there. I felt like I could smell some of the smells. I felt like Frankie did, where, I was chatting actually with Shannon and Georgina about this book when I was reading it. And one of the things that I found so powerful, impactful, this is a young sheltered woman, young sheltered, privileged white woman from Southern California. And when she is in Vietnam, there are so many horrors all around her. Her seeing a rat sitting in the middle of her sleeping accommodations, just eating a candy bar, is completely just like commonplace and not frightening. And to me, that spoke to kind of the level of trauma and horror and fear that she was living with on the daily, that this was just a very commonplace thing to see a ginormous rat in the middle of the floor. And, this book is a lot about just deep emotion and kind of figuring out how to put your life back together after an event that changes you and reshapes your entire existence and reframes who you are and who you're going to be moving forward. And it was just the most painfully gorgeous book I've read in a long time. And forgive me again for the terrible description, but I really want you to experience it for yourselves without any of my spoilers. So this is The Women by Kristen Hannah.
I loved this so much. I mean, I always love Kristen Hannah. And I say this, I think, about everything that I read of hers. But this one was just so good. I feel like with every book she writes, her writing just gets more powerful, stronger, almost like deeper. So my first book tonight is The Other Princess. This is by Denny S. Bryce, and she's written two other books, Wild Women and the Blues and In the Face of the Sun, and both of these were dual timeline novels. But The Other Princess is set exclusively in Victorian times, and this is based on a real person, Sarah Forbes Bonetta, who was, quote unquote, rescued from her African tribe when she was seven. And she was sold into slavery and then rescued again by some emissaries of the Victorian court. And it was decided that Sarah would be given as a gift to Queen Victoria. So at 7 years old, she's taken, from everything that she's ever known. She witnessed her family being killed brutally. She thought she was going to be a slave. Now, all of a sudden, she is in the Victorian court and she's told that she is now Queen Victoria's goddaughter. And there's so much about England that she doesn't understand, and so much trauma that she's coping with that nobody really pays attention to. They just sort of expect her to learn all the things they're trying to teach her and become a good English girl. And in a lot of ways, she is able to meet their expectations. She's very talented musically. She is a gifted linguist, and she really begins to make a place for herself at court. But always at the heart of everything is the fact that Sarah is Black and one of like very few Black people that are this close to the Queen. And when I say close, I mean close in terms of, she's considered to be the goddaughter of the Queen. But in so many ways, Sarah is a pawn. Victoria uses her when it's convenient, sort of casts her aside when having her around, doesn't suit. And so Sarah is torn in a lot of ways because she knows that she's living a life that a lot of her people like will never have the opportunity to live. But she also wonders, if this is a life that her people would want to live. And it just basically chronicles her life, her search for a way to define home and family when, those early things for her were like torn away. It's a powerful book. It's about class and racism, but also about overcoming adversity and sort of doing what you can to be the best that you can be, even when things are super difficult and incredibly unfair. Bryce is an author that I don't think gets a lot of attention in historical circles, and that's a shame because her writing is lovely and it just really, kind of like we were saying about Kristen Hannah, but in a different way, sort of sweeps you back in time, which I think is one of the best things about historical fiction. So this is The Other Princess, and it's by Denny S. Bryce.
I love books like this where you really get to experience something different and interesting. And I mean, I just think about how weird it would be to be plunked down like in Queen Victoria's orbit. Like just
Yes.
culture shock times 5 million.
Absolutely.
My first book of the evening is Outlander by Diana Gabaldon. And this is the first book in the series. There are nine or eight others, and I understand she's working on the 10th. We have Claire Randall, who's an army nurse in 1945. The war has ended, and she has decided that her and her husband, Frank, who works for MI6, it will take a honeymoon since they don't really know each other very well since the breakout of war. They've only seen each other when they're allowed time off, which is twice in their 8-year marriage. And they married when she was 19, 18. So they don't really know each other that well. So they decide to go to Scotland where they got married. And Frank is fascinated by a stone circle that looks like a mini hinge. He's heard that the local witches are planning to greet the sun, which means they do a sun dance and what they do calling down the sun on Beltane. And so he drags Claire out of bed and they see it, and Frank finds it fascinating. Well, Claire sees a plant in the center of this stone and she wants to take it home. But Frank decides that they need to go back because there is one of the witches hanging around and they don't know that they had been observed. So when they're back at their bed and breakfast, she can't get this plant off her mind. So Frank tells her to just go and get it and be done with it. Well, when she goes to get the plant, she collects it, puts it in her handkerchief, and hears an odd buzzing sound. Well, she goes towards the buzzing sound and ends up in 1745. This is Claire's journey trying to get back to Frank. She meets several interesting characters, and she has a hard time with adjusting from what she calls modern life in 1945 to 1745, where women are just part of their husband's property. This is Outlander by Diana Gabaldon.
I
Including
really liked
Jamie
this.
Fraser.
Yes. Yes. I really liked this one and Dragonfly and Amber. I read the third one and didn't like it nearly as much, and so I haven't kept up with it since then.
So my first book this evening was, it is part of a series, and it's part of a, the books are very long, and I believe there are three in the series, but I can't remember for sure. So the first book that I'm going to talk about is The Winter King, The Warlord Chronicles, Book One by Bernard Cornwell. So I have never read a lot of Bernard Cornwell before, and he's very popular in historical fiction. He's written a lot of different series in a lot of different time periods. He is known for the Sharp series. He's also known for the there is this like a series in like eighth century England, but this is about King Arthur. And just kind of a warning, if you are not into battles, this probably is not the book for you. There is a lot of, you know, personal stuff going on as well, but this is, there are a lot of battles in this book. So this book follows a soldier who serves with King Arthur, and it follows him from when he was very, very young to now, you know, when he's an adult. And it's just a really, you know, interesting read. A lot of, you know, you can tell that Bernard Cornwell was very thoughtful in the way that he, you know, laid out this book. So he is an old man. He's a monk now telling the story to a queen about what happened with King Arthur. And she keeps wanting to change the narrative and make it more romantic than it really was. And, you know, he just keeps pulling her back to reality and saying, like, no, this isn't, you know, it wasn't romantic. This is the way it really went. And it was a lot more bloody than she wanted to think it was. And Lancelot wasn't like a really good guy. He was really kind of a coward. And he's just really dispelling the myths of Camelot. And I really appreciate that. It's a really good series. It's, again, fairly long, but really, really enjoyable. I still have the third book to read, which I'm excited about. So that first book again is The Winter King, The Warlord Chronicles, Book One by Bernard Cornwell.
My second book of this historical fiction evening is The Second Life of Mariel West. And this is by, I know, this is by Amanda Skenendorf. And this book was quite a surprise to me. I honestly, I blame Kristen Hannah. I went on a huge historical fiction binge after reading The Women. I wasn't ready to go back to anything else. I wanted to be in different times. And so I stumbled across this book quite by accident. I'd never heard of the author before. I didn't know anything about this book, but the synopsis looked interesting to me. And this book is about, it takes place in the 1920s, and it's about a socialite from LA named Mariel West. And she's living her sort of socialite life with her actor husband, Charlie, and their two daughters. And yeah, maybe she's drinking too much gin to kind of blunt some recent tragic events that have happened to her, but she's living this great life, and such a great life that she barely pays attention when she starts, like, when there's a spot that starts developing on her hand. And the only reason she ever even pays attention to this spot is one time she's getting ready to go to an event and she burns her hand on her curling iron, and the doctor is summoned. And suddenly, with this visit with the doctor, Mariel's wife life as she knows it completely changes. She's bundled off to this hospital where she is admitted under an alias, and she's kind of like, what the hell, like, why is this happening? And from there she discovers that she actually has leprosy,
And that's what caught my attention because, I mean, when I think of leprosy, I think of like way long ago when I used to go to like vacation Bible school in the summer. And like that was part of some of the Bible stories we read. Or like I read a historical fiction book about an island where people went who had leprosy. And so I had no idea, because obviously I'm not that educated in some ways. I had no idea that like in the 1920s, it was still out there in the world. And Marielle didn't know it either. And she is basically whisked away from her life, from her family, from her daughters, one of whom is maybe barely a year old. And she's whisked away in this box car. She has her husband bring all of her, things that she can't live without. She has to go to this hospital to get better, to convalesce in Louisiana, this hospital called Carville. And so she has her husband pack all of her essentials in like multiple trunks, all of these like, day dresses and evening gowns and, fancy robes and night rail and all of her, skincare regimen. She has all this
All
stuff
the things
packed,
you need in a
all
hospital.
that as one needs. Yes. And much to her shock, she's like left at this box car and expected to like hump all of her luggage up herself. Everyone is suddenly acting like she's very unclean, and she's just like not like able to really understand much about this. She shoved like cattle essentially into this box car with a few other people who are also en route to Carville. And when the box car arrives in Louisiana with them aboard, once they are let out of this box car, it's actually it's burned. And she's just kind of like freaked out. She goes to this hospital in the bayou where there's an entire basically city of people living with leprosy who are all sort of inhabitants of this Carville hospital. And Marielle is just completely horrified because in some people, the ravages of the leprosy disease are quite apparent. Maybe some people have hands that kind of more look like claws, or they're missing a limb, or their faces have sores on it. And she's just completely horrified because in her mind, she's still Marielle West, and she doesn't belong in this place with these people. But the longer that Marielle stays in this at Carville, the more her attitude begins to shift. She begins to spend time around the other residents. She begins to help the doctors and nurses caring for the residents in the, I don't think infirmary is quite the right word, but it's all I got right now. So in the infirmary. And she begins to learn more about kind of what it means to be a person who is staying at the Carville Hospital for people with leprosy. She begins to form relationships here. But her entire goal is to get back to her life, to her husband, her daughters, and what's waiting for her outside the walls of Carville. But the longer she's there, the more we as the reader begin to wonder, how is this woman who is now so shunned by society, how is she going to be able to reassimilate into the life that she basically was yanked out of? This book was in a different way than the women, one of the most powerful things I've ever read. It was, again, a very visceral read. The author is a nurse and did not shy away from describing some of the impact, the visible physical impact that leprosy has on a person's body. And just, the way that she also described the different lives and like all the people, like, from different walks of life. It was in the Deep South, but even back in the 1920s, there were no like racial divides at Carville. Everybody lived side by side and worked together and became this thriving community within these walls. And I found everything about it to be one of the most fascinating reads ever. And the writing again was just very powerful. And what I also loved about this book is that we don't really, at least I didn't really care for Marielle in the beginning. I thought she was a spoiled, shallow little bitch, if I'm honest with you. And it was really interesting to see her character arc And just all the development that she goes through and all of the ways that she gets to know herself again and the ways that she kind of remembers empathy and just kindness towards others and how to relate to other people who are different from her. This is a lovely book. If you enjoy historical fiction about something that I think, at least from what I remember growing up and in my history days, I don't remember ever hearing about Carville. I don't remember ever hearing about any sort of ongoing efforts to cure leprosy in the 20th century. But this was a really fabulous book. So fabulous that I actually just got a history of Carville, another book all about the hospital. This again
Ooh.
is the second, I know, I can't wait to read it. This is The Second Life of Mariel West, and it is by Amanda Skinnendorf.
I read this a couple of years ago and really, really loved it. Like you, I did not care for Marielle at first, but I was really struck by her character growth as the story went on, and I did end up liking her quite a bit, by the time it was done. So my next book takes us back to 1791 in Haiti, and we are talking about Mademoiselle Revolution by the fantastic Zoe Sivak, who I interviewed on the podcast in 2022, and she was just a delight in every possible way. I'm hoping that we will get more books from her soon. This was her debut. So this is the story of Sylvie. And Sylvie is the daughter of a wealthy plantation owner and an enslaved woman in Haiti. And she lives a pretty privileged life. And so she doesn't really pay a lot of attention to what's going on with people who are enslaved on the plantation. And so when there is an uprising, and all kinds of people are killed, and the Haitian Revolution begins. Sylvie is really caught off guard. And she and her brother flee and end up in Paris. And their journey there is, fraught with a lot of difficulty that I won't go into because it's a part of the book that, I think you really need to experience for yourself, sort of fleeing, hoping for something better. But what Sylvie doesn't realize is that they are getting to Paris in the middle of the French Revolution. And Robespierre is coming to power. And, the Reign of Terror, which you may be familiar with if you studied the French Revolution in any kind of history or have read historical fiction about it, the Reign of Terror is just beginning. And Sylvie is kind of swept up into this whole new way of like free thought that Robespierre is promoting, the idea that, he says everyone should be equal, never mind that, he is himself kind of a power hungry person. He doesn't see himself that way. Imagine that. And he wants Paris to bloom sort of in this image that he has created. Now, his mistress, Cornélie, is someone that Sylvie is utterly fascinated with. They fall in love, they have kind of a secret relationship, and suddenly Sylvie finds that she has an awful lot to contend with. Because the more she falls for Cornélie, the more she realizes that there are some things that Robespierre is putting forward that she's not sure she agrees with and can sort of pledge herself to. So this is an examination of like the Haitian uprising, also the French Revolution, and how the two are connected. Sylvie is a woman kind of like what Stacy was talking about with Mariel West, where you don't always like her. Like, especially in the beginning of the book, I was really struck by like, how is it possible for her to live on this plantation and be so unaware of the plight of people who lived alongside her? And yet, as the book goes on, Sylvie does sort of come into her own and understand her own privilege that she was born with, and the ways in which this sort of made her complicit in some of the things that went on in Haiti. And she really does want to do better and to be better, but she isn't sure how. And so this is sort of her journey into figuring out like who she really is and what side of history she wants to end up on. This is a long book. It's nearly 20 hours in audio, but it is incredible. And once you start reading it, it just kind of flies by. So this is Mademoiselle Revolution, and it's by Zoe Sivak.
My second book of the evening is The Poisonwood Bible by Barbara Kingsolver. Now, we have Nathan Price and his four daughters and his wife, and they are missionaries and decide that they're going to the Congo to teach to the locals. To minister to the locals, I should say. The things they pack are unrealistic. Cake mixes, evening dresses, gowns, thinking that they're going to these fabulous balls. It is far from reality when they get there. As in the women, they're not prepared for no humidity. So all their cake mixes and things that they bring have turned to stone. Sugar, everything that you could get back in the States has dried up. And so this story is told from the point of view of Nathan's wife and his four daughters. They each get a chapter. And some people have criticized Barbara Kingsolver because she put five different points of view instead of just one or two or three. This was done masterfully because she has. I'm sorry, they aren't prepared for their life and the struggles that they do. At one point, there is no meat, and they have to learn to cook and eat bugs just to stay alive. This was or is The Poisonwood Bible by Barbara Kingsolver. That eating with bugs really, really stuck with me because can you imagine where there's no meat, no nothing, and you have to learn to cook bugs, boil them, bake them?
No. This, I think, was the first book that really showed me the harm that missionaries do. Like, I knew it just from like things that I've learned in my life, but I never really had seen it written in a book quite this way. And this was just an incredible read. I think very thought-provoking. Definitely gives you something to think about when you think about what missionaries do and don't do and perhaps shouldn't do.
My next book this evening is one that I so much enjoyed. I love books about books and how they change people. And this book is Light to the Hills by Bonnie Blaylock. And this is set in 1930s Kentucky. And I'm really getting interested in like the history of like Kentucky, West Virginia, those states. There is some very, very interesting history in those areas. And one of the things that this book really covers is the pack horse libraries that sprung up in the 1930s in rural areas in Kentucky, West Virginia, areas like that. And B Bonnie Blaylock introduces us to Amanda. And Amanda is a young woman, she's a single mother, and she needs a job, and she gets a job as a pack horse rider for the, pack horse program. And this program delivered books
to families who are really, living back in the, in the really inaccessible places in those states. And she meets Finn and Sass, the McIntyre family. And Finn is the young man who he works down the mines with his father, and Sass wants to learn how to read. And Amanda teaches basically the whole family. They become very close, and there may or may not be a romance going on. And there is a dark secret from Amanda's past, which has separated her from her parents, and it has to do with her young son. So this book has a lot of mystery. It has some really scary parts, some really, really, really good parts, and just a really good story. Very, thought-provoking, and very, just a really, really good read. So, again, that book is Light to the Hills by Bonnie Blaylock.
So it wouldn't be a historical fiction episode if I didn't talk about at least one World War II era novel. And my final book tonight, I'm kicking myself for not reading the moment it came out 2 years ago, but lucky me, I just read it in February. This is The Girl from Guernica, and it's by Karen Robards. And this book is based on a painting by Picasso, which I didn't even know existed. I'd never heard of Guernica. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't even know it was in Spain because either I was sleeping in history class that day or we didn't talk about it. So, again, one of my favorite things about historical fiction is learning about things I didn't know about or forgot that I ever knew. And this book is about Sibby, and she is in Guernica in Spain with her Spanish mother and her sisters. I think she has, let's see, one, she has four sisters. Four sisters? She's in Guernica, Spain, with her Spanish mother and her sisters, all younger than her. And her father is back home in Germany. And the family went to Guernica to take care of her grandmother, who has now passed away. But for some reason, despite the fact that they are running out of money, her mother is not willing yet to return to her life in Germany with her husband. And so she's just kind of hanging out in Guernica. And in 1937, Sibby's there with her siblings and her mother. And her mother has just gotten a new job at a bakery, and things are looking up for them. Until on the way home from school, Sibby looks up and sees these planes flying overhead. And one thing that she knows about is planes because her father, back in Germany, builds planes. He's an engineer and he designs and builds planes. And she recognizes the planes overhead as German planes. And to her complete shock and disbelief, they begin dropping bombs on Guernica. And so she is separated from the majority of her family. She's just with one of her sisters. And she lives through a very traumatizing number of hours. If you, like me, get really uncomfortable reading about people being buried alive, this is your content warning that that does happen in this book. And it happens to Sibby. And as the entire town is being decimated, she's trapped under a building where she had gone for refuge and shelter to get away from the bombs. And she's rescued by an American attaché, and his name is Griff. He's a military attaché, and he's there with a couple team members, and they're able to dig her out. And he talks to her, and his voice is very, very soothing. And then he and his teammates assist Sibby and some of her family as they are getting out of Guernica. And just reading, you know, something about something that actually happened that was so traumatizing. I mean, this town was completely obliterated by bombs, and you know, so many people perished in the streets, in buildings. There were fires, there were bombs, there were collapsed buildings. It was just a complete nightmare. And Sibby is furious because she knows that these planes are not actually planes of people that are part of the Spanish Civil War. They are German planes. And all of this is being blamed on these other people. And I'm sorry, I forget. I want to say like Spanish nationalists, but I think I'm wrong. And so she speaks out at the hospital to a reporter about what she actually saw. And Griff prevents her from telling this reporter her name. Jump ahead a little bit. Finally, now she's left Guernica with some of her family. And now Sibby's back in Germany with her father. And they're all having a very hard time kind of adjusting to life in Germany. It's just pre-World War II. Hitler has Germany in his iron fist. And, you know, there's just lots of upheaval going on. And that's when Sibby learns all about German propaganda and the lengths that the German officials, you know, who are with the Nazi Party, will go to spin stories to make Germany look heroic instead of like the evil that they were actually doing. And Sibby gets caught up in this because of Guernica. And as she grows older, she continues to have sporadic contact with Griff because she is aiding in kind of doing her best to pass along information about the Nazi Party to Griff. And that's all I'm going to say about it because honestly, like, you need to read this book for yourself. I don't want to give too much away. This book is very action-packed. It's kind of a high anxiety book in that there's not a lot of downtime for the characters because this is a very turbulent era in history, as we know. And I found it interesting to read a book from the perspective of a young woman living in Germany during the time of World War II, living with her father, who is forced to work on German planes, you know, watching as Jewish friends are taken away. And also, this book kind of addresses the eugenics movement in Germany. And, you know, there's a lot of discussion about like people with disabilities and what would happen to them if they are not found to be fit to continue on the race. And that was really intense to read about as well. There's a lot happening in this book, but at its core, there's a lot of hope and there's, a bit of a romance that kind of runs throughout it. It's certainly not the main aspect of the story, but you know, I loved this book a lot. I really was horrified and very intrigued by this whole story of Guernica that I'd never heard before. And I love when I learn something and think for days afterward about the thing that I learned, and that's what happened in this book. So if you want to read a really interesting book that includes lots of drama and horror and very visceral descriptions of war, but also includes hope and love stories and the powerful love for family and of family and the things that you will do in the name of family, you should pick up The Girl from Guernica by Karen Robards.
I read, what is it, The Black Swan of Paris. This is her
Yes.
first World War II era novel, but I have not read this one. So I also have a World War II novel for my last book. This is Women of the Post by Jashonda Sanders. This was actually my first book of 2024. And this is the story of the 6888, a battalion of Black women who served during World War II and were sent to England to sort through file and distribute thousands and thousands of letters that were either lost or somehow like routed incorrectly, and that no one ever would have received if they hadn't been sorting this. So Judy is one of our main characters, and she's been working as a maid, and is just really disheartened by the way she and women like her are treated. And she really wants to do something else, something better, something more than clean the houses of spoiled, privileged white women. So when she hears that Black women are finally welcome to actually serve in the military, she joins up. And she's not really sure what she's in for, but she figures like anything has to be better than what she's doing. And she goes through basic training and, learns a whole lot of stuff that she hadn't really known about, and is soon sent to England with her battalion. And she's led by Charity, who is the commanding officer, a very complicated woman who is also looking for purpose and self-empowerment. She's having a secret relationship with another one of the women in the battalion. And Charity just has a lot going on, but she wants the women she leads to be remembered. And she wants them to know that they are as worthy and important as any other soldiers that are serving in this war. We also meet Mary Alice, who is a white woman who, when she enlists, learns a secret about her family that she is, in fact, Black. And this throws everything that she thought she knew about herself just like completely in the toilet. And she has to struggle and learn that, her life is not the same as the lives that Black women were leading in the 1940s. And she has a lot to learn about being Black, about the privilege that her supposed whiteness gave her. And she really struggles. Like, she wants to fit in with the women that she's meeting in the 6888, but she's also learned, a lot of harmful and stereotypical things about what it means to be Black in America. And so she really does have to unlearn a whole lot of that. This is a story of war, but it's also a story about growth, about self-empowerment, about learning who you are and what you stand for. And at the end of it, it's just a story of a piece of history that I did not know about. I think, one of the most fascinating things about World War II is that there are just so many pieces that we're never really taught. And you think, like, oh, there's so many books about this. Like, why are so many people writing about this war? And I think it's because there are so many things that we don't know. I didn't know that people were actually tasked with sorting all this mail, and that that was an important piece of morale for the soldiers at the front. So this is Women of the Post by Jashonda Sanders. And if you haven't read it, I highly, highly recommend it.
I want it. How did I not know about this book again?
It came out, like,
Ugh.
This
I
looks
want to
good.
say in the summer of 2023, so it hasn't been out a super long time.
My last book of the evening is Snowflower and the Secret Fan by Lisa C.
Yay.
Now, this book I only read because Shannon recommended it to me years and years and years ago. And I'm not really big into changes with my reading. If it ain't broke, why fix it? But I gave this a try and learned that I loved this book. This was about Lily Chen, who reflects on her time with her close friend, Snowflower. And this is in 19th century China, where women mostly stayed indoors and had their feet bound to make them small, delicate, and perfect. And a lot of these friendships were formed together by how small these feet were. And you were paired with other girls if your feet were the same perfect size. And this book actually went into the process of how they used to bound the girls' feet
Oh God,
and the
yes.
description. And so we have Lily, and she is paired with this girl named Flower, and she doesn't know a thing really about Snowflower's life. She's never invited to her house, only over at Lily's. And but they remain friends throughout their girlhood and beyond. And they develop their own language by painting stuff on each other and on fans. It's a way to, how do you say, get so that they can communicate with each other and relieve some of the of being indoors, cooped up all the time. And so when something happens between Lily and Snowflower that threatens their friendship. And this is when Lily finds out truly what a remarkable friend she had. And this is Snowflower and the Secret Fan by Lisa C. I've read a couple of her other books, but I never continued. Did she ever write anything after this? I mean, after, like, was there a sequel to this book, Shannon? No. That's
No,
really
just
cool.
other, like she's continued to write about Chinese history,
Right.
both in China and then as like more and more Chinese people came to America, she started writing about like the immigration experience. But I think Snowflower was just really special and remains my favorite book of hers, even though I think she's written a lot of really fabulous stuff that digs deep into Chinese history. But there is just something really special about Snowflower and the Secret Fan.
So my last book this evening is A Nod to the West. So this is Where Coyotes Howl by Sandra Dallas. And I've never read a Sandra Dallas book before, but this book like took my heart out, stomped on it. I ugly cried at the end, just, as a warning. And I think I wrote on Goodreads that ending, or I was not expecting that ending, and then I said, oof, at the end. So, Where Are Coyotes Howl? We meet Ellen in 1916, and she moves to Wallace, Wyoming, to take a teaching job. And it is not quite what she expects. I believe she comes from Nebraska, if I remember correctly, and she falls in love with a cowboy named Charlie Bacon. And they get married. And to be honest, it's a kind of a simple story. It follows them through triumph and tragedy. They're just an ordinary couple, kind of living in this kind of harsh environment. Really hot summers, very cold winters with a lot of blizzards. They are far from Cheyenne, which is the nearest town. And just it follows them and their friends, their family, their town and how they survive. Some people willingly came to this place, some people didn't willingly come to this place. And she just follows the different families in this area, and just a really, if you like the West, like I do, and if you want to kind of read an ordinary story, it's not sugar-coated at all, but just a really, really good book, very realistic, can't really say enough good things about Sandra Dallas or her work. This is actually, like I said, I think the first book I've read by her, so I'm very, very excited to read more. And again, this is Where Coyotes Howl by Sandra Dallas.
All right, so that brings us to the end of our historical fiction episode. Thank you so much to Stacey, Amber, and Georgina for joining me tonight. As always, thanks goes out to Christine for all of her fantastic editing. And of course, we thank each and every one of you for joining us each week as we talk about great books.
If you would like to let us know your thoughts, you can do that by leaving us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts or any other platform you use to access the show. And not only does it allow us to see your feedback, but it also helps other book lovers to find us, which is a great thing. So I will be back next Tuesday morning with more bookish fabulousness. And some number of us will be back on Friday with more discussion of great books. Take care, everybody.